I don't really share a bunch of war stories from the podium, so I'm not going to bore you with that. And if you have a war story, that's probably why you're here. That's why I'm here. I had one. And you know, the bottom line is I got here when I was a kid. I got here when I was 21 years old in 1985, December 28th, 1985. And I just knew that I couldn't make it another New Year's Eve. I was done. You know, I barely had 6 months of legal drinking, but I had drank for a solid 10 years. I was raised in an alcoholic household, and pretty much what I knew. And I remember going to AA meetings early on because my father would drop me off on the steps and he would go in, as he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous for many, many years. And I knew I didn't want to get here. Just from the looks of the people that were going in there, they were pretty scary in Chicago. And he used to go to the hardcore groups called the Mustard Seed down there. And at that time, it was in a very strange part of town. And, you know, I did not look forward to going to AA meetings. When I got sober in 85, you know, I did what I was told to do, which was all the slogans, 90 meetings in 90 days. I spent 6 months in a recovery home. Probably did 150, 200 meetings in those 90 days. Got a sponsor. That sponsor is the most popular guy in the room. He probably sponsored 100 other guys. And they didn't talk much about steps to me. I went to a lot of discussion meetings, and I really didn't hear it, or I didn't want to hear it. And I stayed sober. Well, let me qualify that. I stayed dry for many years inside the program Alcoholics Anonymous. At that time, it was very popular to be fellowshipping, which was the coffee afterwards and the camaraderie and get the numbers. And I was single, so I was interested in all the beautiful women that were in AA, and I took the opportunity to try and find as many phone numbers of them as I could. And but you know, I really didn't have the program Alcoholics Anonymous anywhere around me or in me. I avoided doing one of the most required things that I certainly found out is needed in order for me to be sober, which is the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, at 21, it didn't seem like, you know, I needed to have a God. You know, I was 21 years old. You feel like God when you're living in a 21-year-old body. But as the years went on, and, you know, I got into business and became very successful financially, you know, I certainly didn't need God. I did have a lot of friends in AA, and I didn't want to give them up. I didn't want to give up multiple years of time that I had acquired. My ego wasn't going to allow that. But around year seven, I was newly married, and I decided to leave my wife for a lady in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I didn't have any steps in my life. I had what I call middle-of-the-road meetings, and I had a higher power, which I turned my will and my life over to, which her name was Meredith. And that's a very dangerous thing that I did there. About year eight and a half, I wanted to die. It was plain and simple. I had no God. I was dry as a bone. And I heard in a meeting, and I had gone to thousands of meetings by then, that guy says, sober is like being supple. It's like being a tree. When the wind blows, you ebb and flow with the wind. And dry, it's like the same tree, but you're ready to snap at any time. And that was me. And I snapped, all right. A lot of problems in business drove me, you know, a little bit nutty every day, and then compounded with my higher power wasn't cooperating with me at any time at all. I didn't decide to go out and drink. I called on one of my friends in the program and simply said I wanted to kill myself, which is exactly what I wanted to do. you know, the ego was preventing me from giving up the time, and the not having any step work or wanting to return to the steps or even try and work the steps in order to put God in my life to be able to have a power greater than myself was not an option either. And I ended up in a mental ward up in Fullerton for a couple of days there, and it was an interesting experience. But when I got out, you know, the psychiatrist had me on all kinds of hodgepodges of medications. You know, I don't even remember the names anymore. Back then they were lithium and all kinds of, you know, neat names for depression, anxiety, you know, this and that. And eventually what was required of me was I had to drink, or I thought I was going to die. I could not relieve myself of my mental insanity with their drugs. I wasn't going to go to the program out of the ego to get it solved here. So I drank, and I stayed out for almost 12 years. And doing 12 years of research and development after having solid 9 years or 8 years solid in the program or the fellowship is a nasty deal. And, you know, I know that some of us share that common experience, but for me it was so hard to get back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, my sponsor out of Texas, Tommy P., he had experienced the same thing. He had 18 years of sobriety, and he had gone out. And for the very same reasons, almost identical. You know, he was going to meetings sharing, you know, I want to drink again. And, you know, they would tell him slogans like, you know, just fake it till you make it, or sit on your hands and, you know, don't move, or, you know, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth, and, you know, all those great slogans that I haven't read in the book yet. But that's why I picked him as a sponsor. I had known him since I was 11 years old, and we used the same way. We were sober the same way. And finally, when he got back to program Alcoholics Anonymous, the real program Alcoholics Anonymous inside the big book, he was saying things that I never heard. And it was a new Tom, and that was what I wanted in my life. He had God, and I wanted God, because there was no other way out. I was going to die. So what happened to me was, you know, I stayed financially successful, but materially or emotionally and physically, I was pretty much done. I got back here when I was 43. And I remember one night, I was in my home office downstairs, and I was looking at two books on my bookshelf. One was Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous that I had for some 20-odd years, and the other one was Rick Warren's book. And I forgot the name of the title of the book, Purpose-Driven Life. And I was too chicken shit to take down the Big Book of AA. I wanted to seek, again, another alternative to this deal and, you know, fill the hole that I could never fill with drugs and alcohol. And I went up to the closest thing that I could find to God in my house, which was my six-year-old daughter's room, and I got down on my knees while she was asleep, and I prayed to God to get me here. Next day, I was here, and I went into treatment because there was a, you know, I had other chemical issues, but, and I didn't want that hard detox that I knew was coming, so I stayed in treatment for about 2 or 3 weeks, and at the advice of my sponsor and a few other people in the program that had, A, a lot of time, and B, were working the program Alcoholics Anonymous, I left, and I flew down to Dallas, Texas, to where I met a group that my sponsor was involved in, which is the primary purpose group of Dallas, Texas. And there I heard everything that I've been looking for, not only inside my life, but inside Alcoholics Anonymous, I never found inside the meetings that I was attending. And I heard that it was critical, very critical, that I meet God as quickly as possible. You know, I thought, you know, how am I going to find God? And then I started to realize, well, he ain't lost. You were. And, you know, we worked the steps in rapid fashion down there. We blasted through the steps in about 4 days. Just night and day work. And, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of material I had in working with the steps that I found difficult at all. I found them very simple for me to do. And they were very liberating for me. And I had finally been able to get a spiritual experience, the one that I was looking for. So that, you know, that at that that juncture, I knew that I got home. I came home, you know, in October 27th of 2007. I was done for good and all, and I've been done for good and all. I don't think about drinking anymore. The obsession left me at that day. I believe that I worked the first step before I ever stepped back in the rooms. My life is just an amazing deal. You know, I'm a father, I'm a husband. You know, and I have moments today where of just true bliss, true happiness, being free from alcohol. And I have a profound respect for those in the program that seek the steps and seek the steps through God, the program Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll say this, that, you know, tonight's speaker is somebody that I truly respect. I had the opportunity to meet her when I first was new back again here. My sponsor introduced me to her. And, you know, that there's only one place in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, that talks about the female alcoholic. It's page 33. And I thought that would be interesting. But the message that I think we're going to hear tonight is the same message that I've been listening to for almost 2 years straight, and I live that message through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, as far as the big book is concerned, I'm not a big book dumper. I'm a big book maniac. Wherever I go, that book comes with me. Wherever I'm going to get to, either I know I got a copy there or it's with me. But, you know, my favorite page in the big book is page 63, paragraph 1, and it just says basically we had a new employer, and I can totally relate to that. God is my new employer, and I turn my will and my life over to him. It's so easy to do, because anything else that I do is just, I can feel going against the grain. I have a wonderful life, you know, from this program. The gift is amazing. And, you know, I'm privileged to have been able to ask to lead tonight. So thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to remind you to silence your cell phones. It is my pleasure to introduce our speaker this evening. Her name is Angie, by way of Dallas and now Seal Beach. Give her a hand.
Hi, I'm Angie, recovered alcoholic.
Angie.
Yeah, I've been in California now for, gosh, almost 2 years, and I don't know when you start calling yourself a Californian. How do you... But I'm from Dallas, Texas. My home group is the primary purpose group in Dallas, Texas. I also have a home group here. It's the primary purpose group in Laguna Niguel. We have a big book study every Thursday night at 7:30. So y'all are welcome to join us there. It is a big book study. We study the book. The solution to recover from a hopeless state of mind and body is only found in that book. And that's what we talk about. We talk about God. We talk about the steps. We talk about how to get well. We don't talk about our day and our outside issues. We've all got problems. Not to say our problems aren't important. But that's not discussed in the meeting. We're there to help the newcomer, to give the newcomer hope. So that's what we do. And it's fantastic. It's a lot of fun. Welcome to the newcomers that are here. I want to say that right off the bat. And people that have not been to too many meetings yet, maybe you're new to AA, it is a program that absolutely works. When it's worked, the way it's laid out in the books, the way they did it back in the day, back in 1939. Bill Wilson formed something fantastic. It's a phenomenon. It's an incredible thing. I've heard a lot of people say, I don't know how it works, but it works. Well, there's a whole chapter in the book titled How It Works. I know exactly how it works. I'm going to share with you some of my story. I'm not going to tell you too much about the crap that happened and how I drank and what I drank. I mean, we know how to drink. Y'all all know how to drink and use. Did it vigorously. And that's how I work these steps vigorously. I drank vigorously. I wanted to get well. But so I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing that. It's not going to help the newcomer to hear all my stuff. It's important. Our stories are important. That experience is important when you're speaking to a newcomer one-on-one or when you're speaking from the podium so people can relate. Yeah, but I really would like to share with y'all what happened and what I'm like now. First of all, I introduced myself as a recovered alcoholic. Thank God we get to recover. My book tells me that I get to recover. My book tells me to introduce myself as a recovered alcoholic. A lot of people hear cured when I say recovered, and that's not what I'm saying. I'm not cured of alcoholism, but I have been restored to sanity. I'm not crazy when it comes to alcohol anymore. The obsession has been removed. As a result of taking these steps, I had a spiritual experience, and that obsession has been removed. Can it come back? Yeah. If I don't keep doing steps 10, 11, and 12 and doing God's will and helping other drunks, other alcoholics, I can absolutely get sick again. I have a daily reprieve. And it's based on my spiritual condition and what I do on a daily basis. But the fact that we get to recover, oh gosh, I was in AA for, and this is a huge part of my story because I was in AA for 7, 8 years, chronic relapser. I mean, crazy, insane. I don't know how many desire chips I have, probably have. I don't have them anymore. I don't know where they went, but I don't know, over 100, you know, just not able to stay sober. So I have an experience with mainstream AA, going to meetings, meeting makers make it. Not true. My book doesn't say that. I was making meetings, and I certainly was not making it. Meetings do not keep you sober. Meetings are good. Good meetings are good. They don't keep you sober. I have that experience, and then getting so sick and so ill that the only thing that was going to help me was getting physically separated from the alcohol and going to treatment. That's where I heard the truth about alcoholism, and then on the other side, I got to experience AA the way it was meant to be done, the real program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And life is fantastic today. It's totally different, totally different. I hated AA. I thought AA sucked. I thought everybody in the rooms that said they were sober 4 years, 5 years, I thought you were lying. And if you weren't lying, I thought, okay, maybe, but that's not going to work for me. How could that possibly work for me? I saw the steps on the wall, the tradition on the wall, and I really didn't know what they meant. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself, mostly what happened, what I did, and where I got help, and how the truth was told to me, and what life is like now, what I'm like now. I came from a great family. You know, we don't have to be from horrible, dysfunctional, crazy, and a lot of us are, crazy families. But I came from a very loving family, a very good household. Not a lot of crazy stuff going on. Probably the most traumatic, if you want to call it traumatic thing, My parents got divorced when I was six. And when I was sick, too. When I was six, and they, you know, that was really hard. That, I mean, whose parents aren't divorced today? But that was a tough thing, and I didn't get it, and I didn't understand it, and it was emotionally hard. But that's not what caused my alcoholism. A lot of us have a lot of stuff that happened in our childhood, in our young teen years. It is not what caused our alcoholism. That's what the doctor's opinion tells me. Does it exacerbate the problem? Absolutely. Does it make it worse? Yeah, it can. But it's not what caused it. Alcoholism is not causal. So I got to learn that later on. I spent a lot of years blaming Dad. Oh, if he only would have stayed, I wouldn't be so needy, and I wouldn't be so insecure, and I wouldn't need to drink, and I wouldn't have become an alcoholic. It's just not true. I had my first drink at age 13. I split one beer with about, oh, I don't know, six or seven girls at a slumber party. And what is that, like 1.5 drinks each? And we thought we were wasted, and it was fun, and it was no big deal. That was my first intake of alcohol. Next, started drinking maybe around 16 a little bit, not anything crazy. Just partying a little bit, you know, like normal teenagers do, underage. But I think that probably when I was about 22 is when I really started drinking to feel better. I felt different. I felt really in fear of everything. And drinking seemed to help. It seemed like when I drank, I could be really funny. Well, I thought I was. I could dance. I felt smarter. I felt as good as. I didn't feel better, but I felt as good as. And I felt powerful. So I kept doing it. I mean, alcohol is our solution for a long, long time. That's why we do it. That's why we keep doing it. It stops working. We cross that line, and we can't go back. But it's as simple as that. That's why we keep doing it, because it is our solution. You take that away from an alcoholic, full-blown alcoholic, real-deal alcoholic, we get worse. You know, at least I did. I got worse. Started doing a lot of drugs too, but when I decided to quit drugs, I quit. I didn't need a 12-step program. It got really expensive. The depression sucked. I was just done, and I never looked back. Alcohol, I could not do that. Alcohol brought me to my knees. Alcohol, I had to have that. Could not stop. Just partied a lot. I started to lose jobs. I was not one of these people that could wake up in the morning and go to work with a hangover and toughen it out. I was like, forget it. I'll get another job. It wasn't that important anyway. So I had, like, I don't know, 27 waitress jobs in my early 20s. Couldn't do it. I still don't get those people that can do that. Good for you, but I can't. Hopefully you're not in here. But I couldn't do that. Losing jobs, losing some friends, people kind of starting to be a little bit concerned. I noticed I started, but I still didn't think I was an alcoholic. You know, alcoholics are crazy Uncle Robert who beats his wife. And, you know, that's not me. That's scary stuff. But I was drinking now pretty much to get drunk. I was always getting drunk. It wasn't just a couple. I would have some drinks before I went out so I could actually go out, you know, to get the courage to go out. And then I wouldn't remember the whole night. So that's, you know, I noticed I was drinking a little bit weird. And then I started hiding alcohol, and I lived by myself, so, and I was hiding it. And I know normal drinkers don't do that. I picked up on that, started kind of measuring alcohol to make sure I didn't, you know, have half a cup more, to try to make sure I didn't overdo it. I started writing myself little notes. Don't pick up the phone once you start drinking. You know, don't. No drinking before 8 o'clock. I had little sticky notes around my place. You know, just normal people don't do this stuff. The DWIs, all that kind of stuff, which still does not, it doesn't make me an alcoholic because I've got DWIs. I know a lot of people that are alcoholic, they don't have any. Non-alcoholic, they get them too. They just got caught. drinking in the mornings, that kind of stuff. but alcoholic, no. I just really like to party. That's what I'm thinking. But after you get a couple DWIs, you are told to go to AA. You are sent there as punishment, I guess. I started going to AA, and I went to a group in Lewisville, Texas, and I heard a lot of war stories, and I could not relate. I heard about so-and-so going to prison, and I heard about so-and-so's, I mean, seriously, cat, the operation their cat was going to have, and how angry this person was at their mother-in-law, and da-da-da, and all this stuff, and I didn't really, I felt better because I didn't have those problems, but I didn't get it. I really thought, okay, it's just therapy. We just go in and we just talk about our stuff and our day and we leave. But what was going on with me, I wasn't over a certain amount of time I'd feel better, and then I would start getting a little bit crazy again. I'd start getting really irritable and I'd start thinking about drinking again. And I would go home after meetings and I would mark off on the calendar with a big red, another day. And I made it another day. I didn't drink today. And it was just... it wasn't fun, you know. Oh my gosh, I got to do this for the rest of my life. Go to meetings every day, and I was hearing 90 and 90, fake it till you make it. I don't know about you guys, but I've been faking it. This is a program of honesty, right? It's a program of honesty, and I've been faking it all my life. And I'm lying to people all my life. I don't want to fake. How do you fake happiness? I mean, maybe you can fake it for a while, but eventually we're supposed to make it. But I believe that. You know, just put on the big smile. Hi, you know, yeah, everything's great. When it's really not. It's really not. I can't wait to drink again, but I'm just going to sit on my hands so I don't. I've got a disease, you know, and I was going to drink no matter what. But I didn't get that then. I thought if I just go to enough meetings, and I sit in enough meetings, I'll get it. And people told me that. You will catch it. Just keep coming back. You'll catch it. Okay. I really wasn't catching it. Eventually, I would pretty much just say, screw this, I'm thirsty, you know, and I'd go drink. And I would just be told by the sponsor that I had, well, you need to just double up on your meetings. And we started working the steps, and she told me to take, you know, we're going to take our time through working these steps. And basically, the next, long story short, the next 5 years, I'm going in and out of AA. I'm going in and out. I'm getting a new sponsor. I'm doing step one and two. I'm relapsing. I'm going to another group. I'm too embarrassed to go back to that group and get my eighth desired chip, so I'm going to go to this other group and pretend like that, you know, and then I say, screw AA, it doesn't work, and I don't go for a year, and I try to manage myself, and I read self-help books, and I go to therapy, and I move, and I get rid of the boyfriend, and nothing works. All that outside stuff I think is going to fix if I can just get that good job, if I can just, and that wasn't going to work. I did not understand that what was going on, the problem I had was a disease, yes, but it was internal. It was a malady that I had, a spiritual malady going on. After 7-8 years of 1-2 relapse, 1-2-3 relapse, constantly thinking about drinking, constantly wanting to drink, constantly thinking, okay, I will just try again. I'll just try again. This is just, and I remember saying to myself, this is just what life's going to be like. I'm just going to have every 3 weeks, I'm just going to have a big relapse, and I'm just going to have to detox, you know, relapse for like 4, 5, 7, 6, 7 days, detox for a couple days, and then feel good for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then do it again. That's just my life. And I remember my fiancé at the time, I told him that. I said, you either take it or leave it, but this is the way it's going to be because I cannot quit drinking and AA doesn't work. I got really, really sick over the years. I'll just jump to that. I got really, really, really sick. And I'm sure you guys can relate. The heart pounding out of your chest. I never went to the hospital to detox because I was too embarrassed and I was too afraid. I didn't know how dangerous it was to detox at home, so it's really amazing that I made it through. It was suggested that I go to treatment, and I was like, no way. That would mean I was really sick. That would mean that's for really screwed up people. But I remember being really, really drunk, and my husband sat me down, and he just grabbed my hand and he started crying and he said, just please go. And I don't even remember saying yes. Sounds strange. It's not strange. It's absolutely wonderful. But it was almost like somebody else said yes for me. It's almost like God said, go. And I just said yes. And so I went. I said, as long as I can drink on the way. If I can drink on the way there, it's a 6-hour drive, then I'll go. And my in-laws came over and they would not leave. Like for 5 hours, they were sitting there reading the paper and they would not leave. But I knew that was what I had to do. I kind of skipped over a couple of things I really want to point out. I think they're really important. We think that it's all this other stuff that's making... y'all have heard of trigger lists, I'm sure. I kind of lived by a trigger list, and I wrote down all these things that triggered me. The friggin' phone ringing, I thought, triggered me. And I remember my husband would come home from work or golf, and I was always drunk. And he would ask, what happened this time? And I said, well, Grandma Martha called, and she's really depressed and not feeling good. And I felt really bad, and I started missing her, and so I drank. And every time he came home, I would have a different reason. And the thing is, I really believed it. I really believed that's... I got depressed and I drank. So-and-so called and I saw a green car. And I remember I threw up one time in a green car and I got really angry and I drank. I mean, really, that was one of my... And that's just not true. Nothing that happens, even someone dying, even the loss of a job, that's not why we drink. We drink because we're sick up here. The problem lies in our mind, and we have to get that clear out. We have to get that cleaned up. We have to get that fixed. So all these excuses that we have when somebody goes out and relapses and they come back and they say, well, it was because of this, or my husband and I got in this big fight, I call bull crap. Have you worked the steps? What step are you on? And usually it's, I'm working on step four. I'm stuck on step four, or I'm stuck on step six. And when we say we're stuck on a step, it really means we're not doing it. That's what that means. We're not doing it. And I said that a million times. I said it a million times. I couldn't get out of bed unless I had a drink. I couldn't get out of bed to brush my teeth unless I had a drink. I had bottles. I had liquor in my shampoo bottles. I had beer in the doghouse. I was drinking cooking sherry and red wine vinegar when there was nothing left in the house. I snuck through my neighbor's doggy door one time at 7 in the morning to get beer out of their fridge. I was getting pretty bad. I remember walking up the stairs one time and I had two bottles in my... It was like I was on a 14-day drinking binge. I had no idea what day it was, and I had two bottles of wine in my hands. I remember looking to the left and looking to the right and looking straight ahead to the bedroom and thinking, where the heck am I going to hide? I have exhausted all my hiding places. The attic, behind the curtains, my husband's gonna find, he's gonna find him. What's even the point, you know? But I'm still trying to hide. After 7, you know, I'm still trying to hide my alcohol. And my point in telling y'all that is just how bad it got. Went to treatment, very, very sick, and I heard for the first time some things in this big book. I had three big books, and I never knew there was a doctor's opinion in it the 7 years I was in AA. It's unbelievable. It's really sad, and it's embarrassing, and it's unbelievable. And I go to a lot of meetings where there's no books, and it straight up pisses me off. It pisses me off. What are we doing in the meetings, you know? But I heard at this treatment center a wonderful, wonderful man who was not afraid to tell me the truth and who loved me enough to tell me the truth, told me about the doctor's opinion, told me about the physical allergy, told me about the mental obsession, spiritual malady, all that stuff. Told me about pages 1 through 43, heavy drinkers, not, you know, if you're not sure you're an alcoholic, here's the things that you can do to actually, Bill Wilson suggests it. If you don't know, you need to find out, or you're not going to take this work seriously. Go try some controlled drinking. And people get so mad at when I say it. I'm like, argue with the book, not me. Bill Wilson suggests it. I'm not encouraging anybody, but don't you want to know? If you don't have to be here, why would you be here? If we're really, really honest with ourselves, we know. And I knew. This man at my treatment center, he took me to page 24. And I had never heard this before. And I've got to share this. I always have to share this because this opened my eyes. And it was the first sense of hope that I got in years. On page 24 in italics, which means it's probably pretty important, it says, the fact is that Angie Farese, well, I'll put my name in here. I crossed that out, most alcoholics, and put my name in here. Angie, for reasons yet obscure, has lost the power of choice in drink. I thought in the mornings when I woke up and swore to myself in the mirror, I'm done, I'm not doing this anymore, and an hour later I'm drinking again, I thought I changed my mind. My book, my textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous says I went so far and crossed that line in alcoholism that I lost that power to choose. So I didn't have a choice. I drank no matter what. You guys relate to that? You drink no matter what, like even when you don't want to sometimes? You swear it off, swear it off, swear it off. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Oh, okay. And you do it, you know, maybe 10 minutes later, maybe 2 days later. But we always end up doing it again. Lost the power of choice. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. Tell me right there in black and white, it's not about willpower. Our loved ones, bless their hearts, the non-alcoholic loved ones think it is. They just don't understand, and they don't have to understand. I got to understand it. It's not about willpower. If it was, oh my gosh, wouldn't we have done it a long time ago? Wouldn't we have stopped a long time ago if it was about willpower? It'd be great if it was about willpower. Shoot, it'd be great. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We're without defense against the first drink. I have no defense. I drink no matter what. I am beyond human aid. I drank when, you know, Saturday night, midnight, Tuesday morning, 7 a.m. Dr. Phil sucks today, I'm going to drink. Oprah's good, I'm going to drink. I mean, whatever. No matter what. I can remember being in jail, laying on the cell floor, and I remember it stunk, and I remember I had a roll of toilet paper behind my head that I used as a pillow, and I remember it was crowded, and I remember I was scared and all that stuff. But a week later, I am drinking and driving again. Because at certain times, I could not bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory and the suffering of the humiliation of a week or a month ago. It is not, that memory is not strong enough to keep me away from that next drink. And I have proved that to myself over and over and over again. I'm going to remember I was in jail. I am not going to be able to bring it. It's not going to be strong enough. That made a lot of sense to me. To know that I'd lost the power of choice, to know that I'm without defense, actually gave me hope. Right across on the other side of the page, on page 25, right across from that paragraph, it says, there is a solution. And that also gave me hope. It's like I'm screwed, but there's a solution. Now I got to do the solution. Forget everything I thought I knew in AA, from mainstream AA, fake it till you make it, 90 and 90, I wish we could start saying 12 and 12. I wish that people would start saying 12 steps in 12 days. That would be awesome. That's more like the truth. This was huge to me, to learn that I had lost the power of choice. What a relief. I get out of treatment. I remember saying to a guy about a week before I actually got out of treatment, I remember I had all this knowledge. I knew about the steps. I knew how important it was to follow the steps the way they were in the book. I knew now that I could recover. I wouldn't always be recovering and always be sick. God bless. I always be recovering. You know, I hear people with 15 years say I'm recovering. I'm like, still working the steps? When I'm working the steps, I'm still recovering, sure. But the book promises me that, and there's 10-step promises with that, promises me that I'm going to recover and I'm not going to be sick anymore. I remember telling my friend sitting across from a picnic table, I'm going to drink again. This is at treatment. I'm out in a week. I know I'm going to drink again. I have all this knowledge. I know this book now pretty well. I know the truth. I know what's wrong with me. I know what the solution is. I know to work these steps in a timely manner, to be thorough and honest. I know when I get out of here to get a sponsor and get on that work. And steps one and two are questions, and they don't take a month to do. And if you're taking a month to do step one, that's very dangerous. As long as we understand the question, we can get there. But I told him I'm going to drink. I know I'm going to drink. Because I hadn't taken any action. All this knowledge the book talks about, knowledge isn't going to fix it. All this knowledge, no action. Got out of treatment, got a sponsor, went to the primary purpose group in Dallas, Texas. And I walked in there and nobody was talking about how crappy their day was. And nobody was talking about how angry they were. And nobody was talking about how they wanted to drink. And nobody was talking about how they're just hanging on one day at a time. My book says that we get to live life one day at a time. They were studying the big book. They were laughing. There was a big list on this bulletin board of 50 different hospitals that they were carrying the message at. I'm sorry, not 50 different places, but 50 different opportunities. Some of them were the same hospital. 50 different opportunities, and people were like signing up. Oh my gosh, oh my God, can I go with you? And to go carry the message, to talk to the patients there, to step 12 work. I couldn't believe it. I was amazed. They were, yes, happy. Yes, delightful. Most of all, they were free. You could see it. You could see the difference in a discussion meeting and this group that were actually taking action and doing this deal and living life. They weren't sitting on their butts, you know, doing nothing. They were helping others. They were all sponsoring people. And I went into this meeting and I really got into it. And I remember being really, really scared. But my sponsor said, "Are you ready to do this? Are you done? If you're not, that's fine. But go get done and come back when you are. And don't balk at anything I tell you to do. And if you do, you need to go find somebody else to work with, because I'm not going to work with somebody that's not willing to do the work." And I thought she was rude. And I thought she was a big... No. But she scared me. You know, it scared me. And I had never been... But I want to be loved and hugged and told, you know, we're going to love you. And that's what I was expecting. And she was like, "No, I actually do love you and I don't even know you. But I love you enough to tell you the truth that that's not going to do you any good. You need to get on this work or you're going to drink again and you're going to die." And that was the truth. So we got on this work, did steps 1, 2, and 3 in one day, and had 1 week to do my 4-step. I think that a lot of people get turned off in AA, and we wonder why they go out and relapse, because we're not working these steps fast enough the way that the book tells us to. My book says stuff like, "Next we launched into a course of vigorous action," and uses words like "immediately" and "now," and to me that translates... Now, I think that if it meant take your time, go slow, you want to be sure, it would say that. And it doesn't say that. If your sponsor has taken you through the steps fairly slowly and it's worked beautifully for you, cool. The only thing is, the next person that comes along that maybe you sponsor, they might not have that grace period. They might not have that long. So if we just follow the book, we can't go wrong. That's just the way. That's the way I see it. We went through the steps fast. I think that the 4-step freaks people out sometimes. It did me. I never had gotten to it in 7 years because I thought it was a life story and it was a big old write 100 pages. Blah, 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 blah. And it's not. It's an inventory. There is an example in the book on how to do it on one page. Real simple. It's actually pretty cool. You get to write down everybody you're pissed at. You get to write down what they did. It was pretty cool. Real simple, but we've been telling everybody that it's horrible and it's painful and oh my gosh, it sucks. And so who would want to do that? The new people that come in, they don't want to do it. They don't want to do it. But we're telling them the opposite of what our book tells us to do. The opposite of what was supposed to do, what we're supposed to do. So got through the steps pretty fast. It was pretty pretty neat to have the obsession removed and to know exactly when that happened, to have a spiritual experience of an educational variety, and to be able to get out there and help others like we're supposed to do. You know, we read the promises a lot, the promises, but the truth is there's promises to every step in this book. There's lots of promises in this book, and I want to read the ones that are most important, I think. Well, not most important, they're all important. These are incredible, and this is in the 10th step, and this is when it happened for me. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. I was always interested. I couldn't get out of my mind. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. Oh my gosh. And we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude, a whole new attitude toward liquor, has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. I can come and go as I please. I don't have to avoid that Christmas party. I don't have to avoid that Super Bowl party. I can go. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding it. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn it off. Instead, the problem has been removed. That sounds like recovered to me. The problem's been removed. It does not exist. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That's our experience. That's the experience of these first 100 people. This is what it's not their opinion. This is what they did and this is what they got. That's how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. I think those promises are absolutely fantastic. That's rebirth. You know, that's rebirth. And I can stand here and honestly say that that is what happened to me. But I had to get through this work. I had to do it. I had to just do it. You know, and my sponsor wasn't going to not let me do it. Or go on and find somebody else. And that would have been fine with her. But thank God. Thank God she pushed me. I also want to read something to you, and this is straight from the book, but I did type it out on a piece of paper. This program, this real program of Alcoholics Anonymous, is not about just not drinking. It is in the beginning. I just wanted to not drink. The new person coming in wants to know, how do we leave that meeting and not go drink? That's why we talk about the steps. We need to tell them how to do that. But it's not about just not drinking today. It's about getting well so we can live life and so we can get on with our life and so we can start helping. And that's the purpose. That's how we pass this thing on. That's why we sponsor. And then when that little protege gets through these steps, they can go do it. And that's how AA grows. This is what the big book says about our primary purpose. Page XVI, he suddenly realized that in order to save himself, he must carry his message to another alcoholic. Page XVII, it also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic to another, was vital to permanent recovery. Page XXII, we haven't gotten to page one yet. I'm not going to read all. Each day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic. Some more. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. For page 15, if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive certain trials and low spots ahead. Page 15 again, I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Page 60, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to alcoholics. You get the point. There's a lot more. It doesn't say, when I feel the pressure coming on, I need a meeting. I got to get to a meeting. I got to get feeling better. It says to get off my butt and go help somebody else. Get out of myself. And we come in the discussion meetings and we talk about ourselves. If selfishness and self-centeredness is our problem, why would I come in a meeting and talk about myself? You know? What about the person coming in that has no idea how they're going to do this and they're scared to death and they just don't want to die? They don't give a crap about my aunt's cat. They don't. And I know, I'm not exaggerating. I've heard that stuff. And it kills. And it's not what AA is supposed to be about. Meetings are great, but there are some that need to be focused more on the program. Fellowship's great. You know, we've got Starbucks and coffee and all this stuff after the meeting. Talk about your problems all day long, all night long. But the one precious hour we have in a meeting, we need to be helping the newcomer. We need to be thinking about the newcomer. And what a joy it is to do that, to take somebody through these steps and see their life change. And besides, I get to stay sober when I do that. When I do 12-step work, I get to stay sober and happy. And best of all, free. That obsession stays away if I keep doing that stuff. Living in 10, 11, and 12 is all I got to do. And it's so easy. And it's a pleasure. If one of you heard one thing that I said, got a little bit of hope from one thing I said, then it's a great day. This is what worked for me. This is my experience. Everything I say up here is from my experience. It could be different from yours. I love telling people the truth because somebody did it for me. And this is my responsibility as a recovered alcoholic to share some hope with you guys. And thank you very much for having me.